Reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. First division, first chapter, verse 38. We're continuing discussion of the six characteristics of Uttam Bhakti. And we discussed the two characteristics begin to manifest at the level of sadhana bhakti. And those characteristics are kleshagni and shubhada. And then they continue to manifest more and more as one progresses in bhakti. At the level of bhava bhakti, then there's two other qualities that begin to manifest and also increase as one progresses in bhava bhakti. And that those qualities are moksha lagutakrit, which means that one considers that liberation is very insignificant and trivial. And the other is sudurlava. That bhakti, such uttam bhakti, or bhava bhakti, is very rarely attained. Jiva Goswami qualifies this statement by saying that it's rarely attained by practicing any other types of sadhana. He says, sahasre sadhana hari bhakti, labhyate hari bhakti. Rupa says it's very difficult, even by thousands and thousands of sadhanas, sahasra. And Jiva says, yes, thousands of other types of sadhanas, yoga sadhana, or jnana, or karma, or any type of other practices, which are mixed. And even if someone is practicing bhakti, someone may be practicing devotion, but if his bhakti is mixed with karma mishra bhakti, or jnana mishra bhakti, then he may have to wait a long time before he comes to the level of bhava. So, therefore, it becomes even very rare for someone who's practicing improper bhakti. We should be practicing bhakti anyabhilashita shunyam from the beginning, without deliberately and consciously mixing any coverings into our bhakti. And as one progresses from bhava bhakti, when bhava condenses, and then one enters the level of prema, Sarupa Goswami explains there's two extraordinary characteristics that happen or manifest at the level of prema. And one is Sandrananda Visheshatma and Sri Krishna Karshani. And this is what he's discussing here. He describes this Sandrananda Visheshatma. This means Vishesh means a very special, extraordinary type of condensed happiness. Sandra means condensed or concentrated or super saturated. And Ananda means bliss. So at this level of prema, one becomes super saturated, completely saturated with bliss. It's a very extraordinary experience throughout his entire Atma. Visheshatma. Atma means the body. Atma means the mind and the very self. So this is the experience of the premi bhakta, that he's overwhelmed by intense waves of concentrated bliss. So Rupa Goswami, he says that bhakti, uttam bhakti, at the level of prema, is composed of a special condensed bliss. He quotes a verse here. Brahmanando bhavedesha chet paradra rida guni krita naiti bhakti sukham bhode paramanu tulamapi. The bliss of Brahman realization accumulated by samadhi lasting for half of Brahma's life cannot compare to one drop of the ocean of happiness of bhakti. So we often hear this statement put in a more simplistic way of saying that the bliss of Brahmananda doesn't equal the entire ocean of Brahmananda. The happiness of Brahmananda, Brahman realization, doesn't equal one drop of the ocean of bhakti. So here it's even more particularly explained. In other words, we want to contrast the highest possible happiness or bliss in this world or experienced by any type of yogi or sadhaka of any other sadhana is the bliss of Brahman. So Rupa Goswami wants to compare and contrast our bliss or the bliss of bhakti with that bliss. So this becomes a standard that everyone knows about, the samadhi of Brahman, merging in Brahman, Brahmasuja, Mukti, how much bliss that is highly touted and so many scriptures. So, Jiva Goswami here has a brief commentary. This Pararida Gunikrita means the bliss of Brahman accumulated by being absorbed in samadhi lasting for 50 years of Brahma's life. So 50 years he lives for something like 312 billion years or something. So if you're in samadhi for 160 billion years, doesn't that experience, that bliss, that happiness and joy, doesn't equal one drop of the ocean of the happiness of experienced at the level of Prema Bhakti. Van Maharaj, he explains here. He says, the delight in the realization of the Absolute Brahman, as the Shankarite or the Mayavadi conceives it, is a sort of calm, unruffled state of variationless blissfulness. It's a very interesting way. It's like compared to the bliss of being asleep, in deep sleep, before you get your identity, you merge into a nothingness. There's no variety there. Varietyless. This is, however, not to be confounded with Lord Krishna's Sarupananda, his delight in the realization of his eternal perfection. Sarupananda is an act of realization which is full of novelty at every moment, while Brahmananda is a tranquil state without any movement and variety. It's like sleeping. You're just lying in one place, like in your bed. You're not going anywhere, not moving anywhere. And it doesn't change. It exists like that forever. There's no variety. Besides Sarupananda, there's a higher delight which the Vaishnavas called Sarup Shakti Anand. Because Krishna, we say Krishna is Sachidananda Vigraha. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha. Anadi Radha Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. So that within it is very Sarup, his Vigraha, his Murti or Sarup is made of bliss. He is Atmaram. We say that, Atmaram. He's the most Adi Atmaram. He's the original blissful person. Within himself he's made of bliss and he relishes the bliss. But that bliss itself is a Shakti, known as Ladini. And when Krishna invests that, that's called Avesh, Shakti Avesh, when he invests that Shakti in someone else, or in the form of someone else, and then that other person offers that bliss back to him, he relishes it. That's what it says, Sarup Shakti Anand. So the bliss which the devotees realize is when that Shakti, when that very bliss that makes the very form of Krishna, when he expands that as a Shakti, and he instills that Shakti in the heart of a devotee at the level of Prema, it's called Sarup Shakti. Sarup Shakti Anand. So we experience the bliss of Krishna's Sarup Shakti. And that means the bliss of Radharani, a drop of Radharani's bliss, which is the Lord's delight in the delight which a devotee or bhakta enjoys in the delight of Krishna himself. It's a very interesting way of saying it. In other words, the Lord is made of bliss, and he enjoys the bliss within himself. But then that bliss itself is an energy, is a Shakti, and he gives it to the devotees. And then the devotees take that bliss, which is one aspect of love, the Samvit and Ladini aspect of this Prema, and then they offer it back to Krishna, and Krishna delights, he delights in that Sarup Shakti Anand. He derives more delight in experiencing that his own blissful Shakti coming back to him, or being directed to him by his devotee, then he enjoys the delight of his own self, which is made of this Ananda. So it's rather a clear way of saying it. This is so first, in order to understand Sandran Ananda Visheshatma, it's being compared here to this bliss of Brahman. Now that's his own statement. And as it, per the standard, he supports his statement with a quotation from Vedic scriptures. So he says, he quotes Hari Bhakti Sudhodaya, Tvat Sakshat Karana Alada, Vishudabdi Stitasyame, Sukhani Gospadayante, Brahman Yapi Jagadguru. O Guru of the universe, on seeing you directly, I believe this is Prahlad, Dhruva Maharaj speaking, because Hari Bhakti Siddhartha describes about the story of Dhruva Charitra and also Prahlad Charitra and so many other things. Wow, look at this. Swagatam. Samir. We have class till 10:30, if you can wait, or do Parikrama or whatever. You had a boy or what?
Now we have
two or one?
Kids.
You have two boys now?
No, one boy. One is expecting to be
one's
in
that's a, okay. Ready. Maybe it's some stuffy, you know?
No.
You can leave that door open, we'll get some draft, no? We'll get some fresh air. There's maybe too much incense also. So this verse is being spoken by Dhruva. Tat sakshat kananalada vishud abdi stitasyame sukhani gospadayante pramanya pi jagad guru. O guru of the universe, jagad guru, on seeing you directly, I am situated in a pure ocean of bliss. As the happiness of impersonal Brahman is as insignificant as the water in the hoofprint of a calf, or rather a cow. So Jiva Goswami comments, the word Brahmani does not refer to Lord Brahma, but rather the impersonal Brahman. The comparison between the bliss from the realizing the Supreme Lord and the bliss from realizing the impersonal Brahman is famous in works like the Bhagavatam. This is from third canto, chapter 15, verse 43. Tasya Aravinda Nayanasya Padaravinda Kinjalka Mishra Tulasi Makaranda Vayu Antargata Swa Vivarena Chakarate Sham Sakshova Makshara Jushamapi Chittatandvo. This is about the four Kumaras, how they became. Four Kumaras became transformed by smelling the tulsi flowers and the tulsi mandris from the feet of Krishna. So he said, the translation is telling, when the breeze, you can maybe move up, you can move up, because other people, Haribol, you can move up. Well, come and take darshan. Yeah, just come on the side. Some people want to come and take darshan. Small place. This is a Waitavad. Ready. Ready. Acha, yeah, but. So they're describing this wonderful experience that the four Kumaras, they're the ideal example. They were Gyanis, Gyani Bhakt. They were Gyanis. And they had experience of the sweetness of the Madhurya of Tulsi Manjari, a very sweet fragrance. And you can see how powerful is bhakti. If a Brahmavadi, there's no more greater Brahmavadis than the four Kumaras. That's why they're cited in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Vyasadeva. Bhagavatam is very small. It's only 18,000 verses. Padma Purana is 90,000 verses, or maybe 80. Skanda Purana is 90,000. So there are very, very few verses in Srimad Bhagavatam. And Vyasadeva is trying to extract from all the other Puranas the perfect ideal examples to teach the philosophy of Uttam Bhakti. So throughout Skanda Puran, Padma Puran, and all the Vedic literatures that discuss the different forms of yoga, gyan, karma, and bhakti, everywhere they describe the story of the Kumaras. Because the Kumaras were the sons of Brahma, and they were the most famous Brahmavadis, most famous Gyanis. So they were absorbed in the bliss of Brahman like no one else. You know, they didn't even waste any time growing up. Most other famous yogis they would grow up and do yoga and realize Brahman, and they got right to it right away. They merged in Brahman at the age of four. They didn't waste time growing up to become 15 or 20 or 30 or grown men. So they are considered to be the perfect example of Gyanis and Brahmavadis. They're the best of all yogis merged in Brahman. And what happened to them? Just by contacting smelling the fragrance of the Tulsi garland, which is Tadiyanam. It's not even actual Vishnu. It's Tadiyanam, Samarchanam. The things related to Vishnu, they became transformed. There's so much sweetness, there's so much bliss, there's so much joy in things even related to Vishnu, that the greatest Brahmavadis, the greatest Gyanis in the history of creation, they gave up their Brahman realization and become Bhaktas. They became Gyani Bhaktas. They didn't become like full Shuddha Bhaktas. They became Gyani. They mixed. They added devotion. They were still Gyanis, but they added this mood of devotion, Shantaras. Before they were just like Mayavadis practically. So it says, when the breeze carrying the aroma of Tulsi leaves from the toes of the lotus feet of Vishnu entered the nose of the Kumaras, they experienced a change in both body and mind, even though they were attached to the impersonal Brahman understanding. So in Brahman, there is no body. There's no mind. There's no body. There's nothing. There's no differentiation. It's all one. You're just Brahman. You're consciousness. There's nothing. There's no differentiation. But that aroma, the Tulsi leaves, all of a sudden they came out of that Brahman and they enter again the variety of the Atma. Because Brahman is only a covered position of the Atma. The Atma is full of variety. It has these features, different aspects. So then, I think I was kind of like jumping back and forth here. So, so here then the next verse is, this is verse 38 and then 39. Hari Bhakti Sirodaya. So it says, now, next verse, verse 40. This is from Bhavarta Deepika. Bhavarta Deepika is the name of the commentary written on Srimad Bhagavatam by Srila Sridhar Swami. This commentary was written about 1100 years ago. And he's giving a commentary on a particular verse from the 10th canto, 88th chapter, verse 11. And he says, Tvat katamrita patodho viharanto mahamuda kurvanti kritine kechit chaturvargyam trinopamam. Some fortunate people play in the sweet ocean of your topics and enjoy the greatest bliss. They consider the happiness from artha, dharma, kama, and moksha to be as insignificant as grass. Jiva Goswami comments, per the order of his uncle, Rupa Goswami. Jiva says, there are so many statements in the scriptures, like Bhagavatam, which can be quoted, but the author has taken this verse from the Bhagavatam commentary of Artha Deepika of Sridhar Swami to show that his conclusions are confirmed by the realizations of Sridhar Swami. So Sridhar Swami himself was actually an Advaitin. He was following the school of Advaitin philosophy of the Mayavadi school. So, and he was a famous guru in India, South India. But he basically, although he's Maya, he was like externally he was a Mayavadi, internally he was a Vaishnava. So it's interesting that we take, as Chanaka Pandit says in Iti Shastra, we can take gold from any place, even a dirty place. If we find gold, we can take it. Sridhar Swami is not a dirty place, but maybe you can take this incense outside. I think it's. Oh, well. Are you all? Yeah. No. Okay. Leave it. She's not feeling well. We're all. Everyone's. No pain, no gain in this Kartik breath. Everyone has to suffer something. This is the love slap. The love slap of Radharani. Sometimes a man or a woman in their intimate dealings, they give a slap, and it hurts for a moment, but the love lasts forever. The pain lasts for a moment, but the remembrance of the love slap is never forgotten. So if we have a little love slap from Radharani, it may cause us pain for a moment, but we'll always remember that we were touched by Radharani. And that's the whole purpose of doing Kartik Vrata, to receive the touch of Radharani. So Although externally, Sridhar Swami appeared to be initiated in the Mayavadi Sampradaya. He was a great devotee of the Lord, and his commentaries are considered to be the standard of Vishnu Bhakti for the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sanatana Goswami, Jiva, Vallabhacharya, and others, they, especially Jiva and Vishwanath, they first consult Sridhar Swami's commentaries and elaborate or make more comments on them. So this is very significant that Rupa Goswami, in his description of this characteristic, Lutam Bhakti, Sandrananda Visheshatma, that it gives a very, very specialized, extraordinary form of concentrated, supersaturated, absolute spiritual bliss. He's comparing us to the bliss of Brahman, and saying Brahman is nothing. The four Kumaras are the greatest Brahmavadis, and they gave it up to become devotees of Vishnu. And even one of the great, that's ancient times. I mean, the four Kumaras is like from Satyuga. That's like millions of years ago, the greatest, most recognized Brahmavadis throughout the history of Vedic Dharma and Vedic culture. They came to this side. And they realized that the bliss of Brahman was insignificant to the bliss of smelling of tulsi flowers. Just imagine. And now it's come to more recent times. It's a very systematic way, because someone might say, well, that's so far ago, so long ago. That was in Satyuga millions of years ago. What about nowadays? So nowadays means 500 years ago. And 500 years ago, Sridhar Swami was considered to be the Acharya for India. He's one of the leading Acharyas. His statements, which were, of course, at that time, 400 years old. And so then Rupa Goswami specifically says, well, look what your guru says. Look what the Jagat Guru of the Vaitin Sampradaya says about this in his commentary on the Bhagavatam. And this is what he says. He says that some fortunate people, those that, not you Advaitins, not you Shankarites, but some fortunate people, the Vishnu Bhaktas and Krishna Bhaktas, they play in the sweet ocean of Krishna's topics, and they enjoy the greatest bliss, not just bliss, but the greatest bliss. They consider the happiness from Artha, Dham, Kama, and Moksha, which you and I and all of us Mayavadis have, to be as insignificant as grass. So Jiva Goswami says it's the reputed author, Rupa Goswami, has taken this verse of Sridhar Swami to show that his, Rupa Goswami's, conclusions are confirmed by the realization of Sridhar Swami. Because someone might say, well, these are Rupa Goswami's conclusions, but he's a Vishnu Bhakta. He's a Krishna Bhakta. So these are subjective statements. These are biased or prejudiced. So I don't know if we can accept these as praman or evidence or absolute, although he's citing Bhagavatam. But then again, someone might say, well, Vyasadeva was also Vishnu Bhakta, Shakti of Esh of Lord Vishnu, and Shukadeva. So then he says, no, listen. The most popularly widespread, recognized, modern Acharya of the Advaitin Sampradaya, he himself is agreeing with my ideas. Acha? Oh, then maybe there's some validity to your statement. Maybe there's some authenticity and authorization. And in fact, this is how he concludes his discussion of this fifth quality of Uttam Bhakti, which manifests at the level of prema, that we submerge in an ocean of bliss, anandam buddhivardhanam. This is promised. There are seven benefits or seven great treasures that one receives by chanting the holy name. Some treasures come at the platform of Namaparad, some come at the platform of Namabhas, and others come at the platform of Shudanam. So Shudanam is Ananda Buddhivardhanam. We just like become particles, merged in an ocean of bliss. Although we're particles, we're not merged, we're individual, and we're relishing the bliss of serving Krishna and chanting Shudanam. I'll read the translation from Prabhupada's godbrother. He always gives some new twist with his English I like so much. This is Bhan Maharaj. It is stated in Bhavarta Deepika, the Shrutis, this is the prayers by the personified Vedas in chapter 88 of the Bhagavatam, which are really wonderful. I remember when we first joined Krishna consciousness, there's two scriptures we didn't like to read when we first joined. And we didn't like to read Adi Leela of Chaitanya Charitamrita, because there's so much heavy philosophy and it's so much tattva. We used to skip over it and go to Madhya Leela and Antya Leela. back in, you know, it's 1975. Of course, Adi Lila was out even before that. That came out as a separate book. And later, the 17 volumes of the full CC came out. Another part that I used to skip over was in the Krishna book. We started reading Krishna book before we joined. And when I got to the prayers of personified Vedas, I used to jump over that and go to other Dwarka Lila. And it's up at the end of the book, practically. And at the end of the book, there's this water squirting between the Mahishis and Dwarka, and it's very much like Gopi Bhav and all those prayers. But then as the years went on, I started to really, really relish Adi Lila. And it was so much the philosophy, Guru Tattva and Srishti Tattva and Nityananda Tattva and so many things, Balaram, creation. It becomes very, very relishable, actually. And then prayers by the personified Vedas, I would read those and relish them, but when this book, Sarta Darshini, was produced, when this book came out, and we were had the opportunity to read Vishwanatha Chakravarti's commentaries on the personified Vedas, then we really appreciated how much wonderful nectar there is there in glorifying Krishna. Because these personified Vedas, they also became gopis. The Shrutis became gopis. So their statements are full of Gopi Bhav, full of Gopi Bhav, which is very much anukul for Manjari Bhav and the mood of becoming a servant of Radharani in Vrindavan. Especially when you read that those Shrutis, their prayers of the personified Shrutis with Vishnu's commentaries. So the Shrutis are saying, this is the verse that we already mentioned, in their prayers to the Lord, while invoking him from his slumber before creation, because Vishnu, he goes into Yoga Nidra, when he absorbs everything in himself, then he goes into Yoga Nidra, and then there's avyakta, avyakta, there's creation, and he exhales and wakes up. So it's called the, what's it called? Purusha Shukta, I believe. It's called Purusha Shukta, and these are the prayers of the personified Vedas by which they wake up the Lord. And ISKCON and Didi Puja, because there's a lot of Aishwarya mixed in this puja in the temples, because Archan Marg is generally done according to the lines of Aishwarya. So the worship of Radha and Krishna in ISKCON is generally, Prabhupada recommended that we follow the lines of Aishwarya by worshipping them in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. So in the Didi worship book, we will see that these Purusha Shukta prayers are listed there. And they are recommended they can be chanted to the Lord while waking him up every morning. But in Ragmarg, then other verses will be chanted. Go Gopa Gokulananda Yashodananda Vardhana Vachistra Yasardam Pratira Satchagatpate. And those prayers are also in the Deity Worship Book, which is very interesting if you look there. Because these prayers are those in. So the Deity Worship Book has a lot of different approaches to Deity Worship. But the general thing is this. So these are the same Shrutis, and they're chanting this prayer. O Lord, a few of thy devotees, not any devotee, but merely a few devotees who have attained Bhava Bhakti alone, who swim in the ocean of nectar of the nectar discourses on thy divine pastimes, and enjoy the supreme delight from drinking the nectar thereof, alone do reject all the four desires for Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, considering them as worthless as straw. So, at this level, what the Shrutis are saying, at this level of prema, or he's saying actually Bhava Bhakti, the level of Bhava Bhakti, I'd say in the beginning of prema, or because these are two characteristics that manifest at prema. So at the beginning of prema, which is kind of like the extension of the upper part of Bhava Bhakti, at that point, one can fully decry moksha. And fully, you know, up before that, one may still have some attraction or interest in moksha. But he's saying now at this point, everything, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, is like straw. So Jiva Goswami raises a question. Why does Sri Rupa cite a shloka from Bhavartha Deepika, Sridhar's commentary in Bhagavatam, when there are so many other verses in the Bhagavatam itself in support of this concept, Sanjanananda Visheshatma, which is the quality of Prema Bhakti? The reason that inspires Rupa Goswami, Sri Jiva, says, is that Sridhar Swami had understood the truly esoteric concepts of the Bhagavatam by his own realization, and hence such an authority has been cited by Sri Rupa. So this is a conclusion of the discussion of Sandra Atma Visheshatma. And these points, these six characteristics of Uttam Bhakti are briefly discussed here in three or four verses by Rupa Goswami, this fifth characteristic of Sandrananda Visheshatma. And the rest is something like the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. Devotees have to experience what all that concentrated bliss is about. Because it's put into words, sandra, concentrated, condensed, super saturated, and then ananda or bliss, and then vishesh of an extraordinary special quality that's not found anywhere in from any type of pursuit. So he's explaining this is it. And then of course later, in Nectar Devotion, he'll describe different pastimes of different devotees in relationship with Krishna in the different stai bhavs of Madhura Rati and Sakhi Rati and Vatsali Rati. And in those pastimes, one will see the experience of this Sandra Nanda Visheshatma, this extraordinary bliss that the devotees experience. So now the next quality is, the final quality is Sri Krishna Akarshani. This is the Akarshan. This means, in one sense, it means gravity. It means gravitational pull. Karshan means gravitational pull. We say Sankarshan, complete pulling power, the power to pull everything and pull everyone. That's Sankarshan. Because Sankarshan is holding everything together. Sankarshan, by his energy, he is the glue. He is the glue which sticks everything together. And quantum mechanics, they describe the nature of reality, material reality, and different forces, atomic forces and subatomic forces. But all these gravitational, these forces which hold one atom in orbit around another atom, or one planet in orbit around another planet, that's all Balaram. That's all Sankarshan. So this Karshan, this word Karshan means the pulling power or the attractive power. So Sri Krishna Karshani means that Prema Bhakti has the power to attract Sri and Krishna. Sri is Radharani and Krishna is Krishna. So Sri Krishna Karshani, it can pull Radha and Krishna. Just this little summary here, I put here on this Sandrananda Visheshatma. It says here that this quality, Sandrananda Visheshatma, incalculably condensed bliss. The stage of prema, characteristic manifestation of happiness, of prema bhakti, is so densely concentrated that nothing can penetrate it. No other perception or thought can even momentarily register in a devotee's mind. It's like the analogy we mentioned before. If you take a sponge and you submerge it in water or some fluid, that sponge becomes super saturated with that water. And then unless you squeeze it and get rid of the water, you can't put anything else in there. It becomes concentrated. So this is what this word actually means, that the Atma, the mind, the soul, the body, every aspect of the devotee becomes super saturated with this experience of bliss, that nothing else can come inside there. It's like a bliss bar. He's totally, so densely concentrated, nothing can penetrate it. It's like dripping, saturated. You can't put anything more into it. Nothing can register in devotee's mind. I mean, it's inconceivable, because so many things impenetrate our minds. One thing rises, a feeling of happiness rises, and then that sinks or recedes, and another thing comes. Of course, chapter 15 of Nectar Devotion describes this whole concept of how insignificant and trifling is the happiness of Brahman. And that talks about Sri Krishna Karshani summary. So this is a verse, this is Rupa Goswami's explanation of this quality, the final quality of Prima Bhakti, which is this quality of Sri Krishna Karshani, that when one is so much saturated with this blissful feeling, and which is derived from being totally absorbed in the service of Krishna, that Krishna is attracted to that mood of joy and that mood of absorption. The Radha and Krishna come at that time to the devotee. He says, he describes Sri Krishna Akarshani, Kritva Harim Prema Bhajam Priyavarga Samanvitam Bhaktir Vasi Karotiti Sri Krishna Karshani Mata. Bhakti is called Sri Krishna Karshani because it makes the Lord addicted to prema and brings him under the control along with his associates. This word Vasi. Vasi means residence. And we say Vasi Bhut means to be under the control of. So Krishna becomes controlled. At this point, Krishna becomes controlled by the prema of his devotee. So now it's explained here. Sri Krishna Karshani means the power of drawing Krishna to oneself. Drawing power, like gravity is drawing things. So you throw something up, then gravity pulls it back to the earth. Prema Bhakti is called Krishna Akarshani. In other words, possessing the power of attracting Krishna because such bhakti charms Krishna into complete submission through endearing love and affection for Krishna with his entourage. This word charms, well, usually when we think of this word charm in English, immediately we think of snake charmer. Some, especially in India, we see these snake charmers in Jaipur and Pushkar and wherever Western people go, Haridwar. They always have these snake charmers there. And Braj, they're pretty cheap. They don't charm the snakes. They just put them in a basket and sit on the side of the Prikama Marg and say, snake, 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 darshan, darshan, 5 rupees. So the snakes are rather passive over here. They're not into performing much. They're very laid-back snakes. If you go to Pushkar and Haridwar and other places, then the snakes are more active. In Braj, everyone's laid back, I guess. Even the snakes. But when you go there, they also have a basket. They also have a cobra. And then the guy plays something like a shanai. And the snake comes out of the basket. And he plays the music. And apparently snakes like music. That's some quality they like. And as he plays the music, then the snake dances back. He becomes charmed. He goes like this. And if he stops playing the music, then the snake gets bored and he goes back down in his basket. So when we say this prema, the love, the pure love of the devotees, it charms Krishna, then I always think that Krishna becomes like this in front of the devotee. And Prabhupada uses the term in Krishna book that he says that Krishna becomes like a doll. He becomes like a doll or a mannequin in the hands of Radharani. So you have a doll, and you move the doll, you pick up the arm of the doll and put it down, or make the eyes go up and down, or like these mannequins, you know, your puppets, I think you call them puppet. I think Prabhupada meant to say puppet, but the English came out, the translation or whatever, it came out as doll. It's like puppet. You make the puppet arms raise. So Radharani makes Krishna dance. And all the gopis, even in Gokul, all the gopis were making Krishna dance. When he was little and Gokul, then they would come to Gopal, all the ladies, Yashoda's friends, Rohini and Parvati and Prabhavati and other gopis. They would come visit Gopal and they say, listen Gopal, we'll clap our hands and we'll sing some song, and if you dance, we'll give you a ladu. So then the gopis would get around in a circle around Gopal. He would be sitting on the ground like this in the courtyard or outside. And there were all these big ladies would be gathering around and they said, come on, Gopal. Da 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 Krishna kani. And they would start singing some song and then he would look at them and then one gopi would hold the ladu. Come on. And he would look at the ladu. Oh, that looks good. And then he knew that he wouldn't get that ladu unless he danced. So then he would dance. So he was like a doll in their hands. Even from the time of birth, he was a doll. He was a doll or a puppet in the hands of the mothers. From his birth, he was simply dancing to the love of his devotees. And Prabhupada once said about Radha Shamsundar in Vrindavan, he said, our temple in Vrindavan, our Radharani is dancing. There's another temples in New York and other places, all the deities of Radharani and Rukmini Dwarkadish, they're like Lakshmi Devi. They're holding a lotus in the left hand, and the right hand is like this. In the left hand, they usually have a marble lotus. and it's hanging down. And it's like just like Lakshmi Devi. And they're giving some blessing with the right hand. But in Vrindavan, our Radharani, she's dancing. And Prabhupada commented on that. He said, if Radharani stops dancing, then the whole spiritual world will collapse. It will come to a halt. So she's dancing, and her dancing makes Krishna dance. Not even dancing. She just even if one of her eyebrows, if one of Radharani's eyebrows dances, as we think of dancing means your feet are moving, your legs are moving, your hands are showing mudras, and this is dancing. But Radharani also dances. Her heart is dancing, and her eyebrows are dancing. So Radharani just moves one eyebrow, dances a little bit, then Krishna's like, he's finished. Totally vasibhut. The same word is used there in Rasa Shastra. Vasibhut means controlled. That Krishna becomes vasibhut. He becomes controlled by his devotee. So this is the but this is the quality of Sri Krishna Karshani. That Krishna, that bhakti, prema bhakti, charms Krishna into complete submission through endearing love and affection for Krishna with his entourage. Jiva Goswami points out that in the text, Sri Krishna, in the text, the word Sri Krishna Karshani, which is the term that Rupa Goswami is using to describe this final quality of prema bhakti characteristic, the prefix Sri refers to the entourage of the Lord. That means all the Nitya Parikars, the eternal associates of the Lord. So that, this is a very interesting point. So that it is not only the Lord alone, but the Lord with all his entourage that becomes charmed into submission by prema bhakti. If you look at page 15 in the bottom, Nectar Devotion, where Prabhupada is describing this point, he says that he takes Sri to mean Radharani. Here, the commentator, Sri Jiva Goswami, is saying Sri Krishna Karshani. The word Sri refers to Radharani. This is what our commentator, Srila Prabhupada, says. But our commentator, Sri Jiva Goswami, he said that Sri refers to the Lord with all his entourage. So our Prabhupada, being a dasi of Radharani, he says, entourage? He's reading Jiva Goswami's commentary, obviously. Okay, Jiva, you say entourage. But for me, there's only one entourage for Krishna. The sum and substance of all the associates of Krishna is Srimati Radharani. So for me, Sri Krishna means Radha and Krishna. And when one has prema, then Radha and Krishna are drawn to him, and they become controlled by his love. So Prabhupada had direct experience of that. So when he sees Sri, he says, no, Jiva, Sri for me is Radharani, Srimati Radharani. So in the future, people will give class and say, yes, there was a famous commentator on the Goswami Granth, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and he took this word Sri to mean Radharani. Because we have read in some biography of this great saint that from his birth, his father was feeding so many sadhus in the house. And he was praying, he was requesting all those sadhus, please bless my abhay, my baby boy, that he becomes a pure devotee of Radharani. So this commentators will be telling this 300 years from now, no doubt. Thus, while Sri Jiva points out that prema bhakti causes a submission both of the Lord and his entourage, Sri Mukunda Das, another famous commentator on Nectar Devotion, he points out that prema bhakti is directed not merely to the Lord, but also to his entourage. Just as when one speaks of the king as appearing, one means the appearance of the king with his retinue. In other words, we say, oh, the prime minister is coming. No, the prime minister... Like sometimes we say in Vrindavan temple, often happens, the governor of UP comes to visit and take darshan, and they make big arrangements, security, etc., garlands, chandan, all these things, to receive him, box of sweets, and lamination, all that. So the governor is coming for darshan. So he doesn't just walk in by himself. His secretaries, his wife, his friends, his press reporters, so many people come. So when we say Sri Krishna Karshani, that prema attracts Krishna, Krishna is never alone. He's always with his associates. Now the translator's note. It may be noted here that while Krishna, as the all-inclusive reality, is absolutely free in all respects, not being subject to any kind of bondage, yet there is one exception. He is the self-elected slave of a real selfless devotee of his who has attained prema bhakti. I like his language too much. It's really good. That Krishna, in other words, Krishna is free. He's swatantra. Swatantra means free, totally independent. No one controls him. He's swatantra. He's abhigya. He's all-knowing. But he's vimugda. Vimugda means he becomes overwhelmed and forgetful. He forgets his omniscience and omnipotency in the presence of his devotee's love. He becomes forgetful. Who am I? I'm God? No. I'm your plaything. I'll dance for you. You clap your hands. I'll dance for you. So you can't do that and think that you're the supreme Godhead and dance around in a circle for one paisa ladu. So this is the power of prema. This is the karshani, the karshan, sankarshan, the attractive power of prema. And that's why one of Balaram's names is sankarshan. Because he serves the Lord in so many wonderful ways. In all five rasas, Balaram is serving. In Madhurya rasa is Anangamanjari, Sakhi rasa is Dauji, Balaram. And also in Vatsali rasa is Balaram. He has a mood of a parent, protecting, nourishing, making sure Krishna eats and drinks. So he's serving in all five rasas. So therefore, he's attracting the Lord in all five ways. So he's completely attracting the Lord in all five rasas. So he's Sankarshan. This is Balaram. So he's really, because he's absorbed in the bliss of bhakti. Sevananda. It's explained in Adi Lila, as we were mentioning. Adi Lila chapter 5, the glories of Nityananda Balaram. So it describes there, he's simply tasting the extraordinary bliss of serving the Lord in pure love in all different ways. So he's Sankarshan. We'll stop here if there's any questions or comments. Manjari?
At the beginning of class, you were speaking about the coverings on pure bhakti, especially Yamashra bhakti. I started to think about the example in Bhagavatam where Kapila Devi instructs bhakti to Devahuti and not Kandapa Muni.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to know a bit more about that.
Well, that in the third canto, yeah. Where Kapila Shiksha, where he's teaching his mother, Devahuti, the wife of Karda Muni. Well, that bhakti, of course, that's way early on in the Bhagavatam. So there, he's explaining. That's where we hear about these first introduction of the bhakti manifests in these different levels. This is the actual first time where we're finding out. Because in first and second canto, we're just hearing about bhakti, and bhakti is parodharma, the supreme form of religion, and it brings with it knowledge and detachment. And so many statements are there. In the third canto, then we start to find some specification of bhakti, that it comes, this actually can be karma mishra and gyan mishra bhakti. So this is what Kapila Muni is telling there. He starts to introduce these concepts that are different, how bhakti has these coverings. So that we become very aware right in the beginning of our study of pure bhakti. Because as I mentioned in the beginning, the entire Bhagavatam is simply a commentary on this verse, Anya Abhilashita Shunyam. Knowingly or unknowingly, Vyasadeva had that verse in his mind. And the verse is actually written down clearly and distinctively by Rupa Goswami in the introduction. That's the first verse of Nectar Devotion to describe bhakti. The Bhagavatam is a whole commentary on that. The specifics of all the differences I can't recall in my mind right now. But that's what's being discussed. Kapila describes Shuddha Bhakti and then Karma Mishra Bhakti and Gyana Mishra Bhakti. That is the content of his teachings. And if you were to look at that, or we look at that in Prabhupada's commentaries, then we could review those things, but that's separate discussion. I'm not sure what you're asking exactly.
What was the state
for Kandapa Muni, because he wasn't taught it. That's interesting. What was the state of bhakti of Karda Muni? Well,
he left.
Right. It seemed to me that he was more of from you see when you use Brihad Bhagavatamrita as kind of a standard of measurement. It appears that Karda Muni. He's a gyani, basically. He's a gyani in Shantaras. I wouldn't say any more than that. He wasn't too much involved with family life to begin with, and then momentarily, briefly involved. But he was, because you see, that he was very much interested in mystic powers. This was very much his mood of having these mystic powers and utilizing them for the, you know, the pleasure of his wife or whatever. And then when they had the child, he played his role in Krishna's Leela to produce his Shakti Vesha avatar, Kapila Muni. So that was his service. So you can say, you know, Shantaras with a touch of Dasya, because he did this service. But it's not direct, it's not really Dasya Bhakti, because it's not personal, he didn't render any personal service to the Lord. He's the father, so he didn't really serve Kapila. So this would be our understanding. Hare Krishna. It would be like this, Shantarati, and some momentary, he played a role in the Lord's Leela to manifest Kapila, but afterwards he went back to his yoga. He had more attachment to his yoga and more attachment to his life of austerities than he did to receive or follow the wonderful teachings of Kapila Muni, which is is the essence of Bhagavatam. So he wasn't really attracted to Bhagavatam. Although he's in the Bhagavatam, he himself, the Bhagavatam is being spoken by Kapila. He's not attracted, he leaves. I'm more attracted to yoga. The Bhagavatam itself is the Sarupa of Radha and Krishna. So if one is attracted to the Sarupa of Radha and Krishna or to Bhagavatam, then he must manifest in one of the ratis. He must manifest in Dasi Rati or Sakya Vatsalya or Madhurya. But Kardama Muni, he had an opportunity to begin a life of bhakti in relation to the Bhagavad Shiksha coming from his son Kapila. Well, he said, okay, later, you know, this boy and my wife, they can talk about this bhakti. I'm going to the forest and do my yoga. So that would appear to me that he's a Gyani in Shantarati. Yeah, this position of Brahman realization is the individuality, which is the individuality, and when we're an individual, then we can experience so many variety. This is actually covered. This state of Brahman realization, the individual, just like when the analogy that you often use is like sleeping. When you're sleeping, there's no movement, there's no feelings, there's no activity, although there's some dreaming, but at least someone's to observe you. The body is not moving anywhere. There's no activity. There's no feelings. There's no variety. There's no exchanges. But you're existing. There's existence there. But then when you wake up, you express your individuality, and there's movement. You're moving here and there. There's exchange of feelings. There's so much interaction. And then again, you merge into sleep at night. You merge into the bed. So it appears that there's some oneness there. But then when you wake up from that, then the variety. There's variety and individuality. So this platform of merging Brahman is the individuality of the Atma, which is eternal, and the variegatedness of the Atma, which is internal, and the ability to experience various experiences with the Lord, that becomes covered, like a sleeping state. So this is not an eternal, this is not the Jiva Dharma, as Bhaktivinoda says, of the soul. Never really happened. Happens temporarily. Yes.
In regards to the four Kumaras, it seems that the Gyandi, the path of Brahmavadis, has some potency to purify, because they were attracted to the fragrance of the Tulsi Patra from the lotus feet of Vishnu. Whereas, you know, many times we smell ourselves Tulsi, but we not be attracted. But they, on the other hand, in the beginning of the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's mention how Brahmacharya, tapas, how these purify. But then when we were studying that section of the Bhagavatam, it appeared that these have the potency to purify only to the degree they have a mixture of bhakti in them.
Yeah. So what do you want to say? What do you want to ask?
Oh, so my question is it really that that jnana has some potency to purify, or is that is really only if it has some mixture of bhakti in it? Because, as you said, the kumaras afterwards, you said, they didn't really become real Shuddha Bhaktas, but they added bhakti to their...
Yeah, Gyan has the potential to purify if the person is not an aparadi. See, this is the aparadi. Someone may be a gyani or yogi. But there's like two types. One is an aparadi, like the Mayavadi aparadi. So then he can never get purified to have any attraction for the Lord. But the four Kumaras, they weren't aparadis. So therefore, they had the purity where they could receive the mercy of the Lord by the contact. But someone is a Mayavadi, they can't, because they're offenders of the Lord, bhakti won't reciprocate with them. Because bhakti is Krishna's own energy. It's Krishna himself. It's Radharani's expansion. So this is how I would answer it. The four Kumaras, they could be attracted, but so many other Mayavadis, and they're not attracted. They can't be attracted.
Could we make a statement that jnana without the mixture of bhakti in it doesn't purify, or jnana does have intrinsically?
Well, jnana will bring you to sattva gun, so that's also a type of state of somewhat purity. Mm. But even in all that's what the whole nectar devotion, so many scriptures are saying, jnana or karma or yoga, if they don't have a touch of bhakti, no perfection will come from there. Mm. So if you're jnani, and then you're just practicing jnana without any bhakti, you can come somewhat to sattva gun and purify, and have some, you can realize Brahman, but there must be some bhakti there. We often say that when the Mayavadis even have to do some puja, almost invariably they won't find anybody that's not doing jnana mixed with bhakti. But some are doing jnana mixed with bhakti and they're offenders. Mm-hmm. Some are doing jnana mixed with bhakti and are not offenders. So no one will get any success without. They may get, just by studying the Vedas, one will learn how to perform, because the Vedas will say, if you're a jnani, you're following the path of jnana marga, you have to perform austerity. So then he'll read that, and he has faith in the Shastra, so he'll start performing rigid austerities. That's part of jnana marga. So that will the austerities will purify his senses. When you control your senses, they become purified of tamogun and rajogun. So just the study of jnana and the knowledge, transcendental knowledge, he will become situated in sattva-gun. But if he wants to have any kind of merging in the body of the Lord or any kind of kaivalya, then there must be bhakti mixed in. Because without that, you can't get any transcendental perfection. Mm-hmm. But if he's mixing bhakti with his jnana and he's an offender, then he'll never go beyond that impersonal realization and he'll fall off from that. He'll come down again. Ariyakrishna parampadambada patantyada nadishat. But if he's doing jnana mixed with bhakti, which is they're always doing, but he's not an offender, then there's an opportunity for him to upgrade his realization, for that jnani to become like Shukadeva Goswami, who was also a jnani, but then he heard the Bhagavad Shlokas and he got the higher taste and became a Shuddha Bhakta, or like Kumaras, because they were not offenders, you see. But this is the understanding. So just jnana devoid of bhakti makes you're like a good yogi, but you're only in this world. You don't want to go out of this world. You can't even go to Janaloka, Maharloka, Tapaloka. You'll be in this earth planet. You have to mix bhakti if you want to get any actual reward from your jnana. Again, and your reward may take you to Janaloka or Maharloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka, or Brahman. That's not a cheap thing. That means a heavy jnani with a good touch of bhakti. But then if you're an offender, then you come out of there. If you're not, you float around in there and then you may get some mercy, you know, like this. Get a chance to do bhakti. Is that all right? So, what next? Well, that's it. Nectar devotion, kija. Why don't you go to the other side? Yes, in the room. We have another class at 3 o'clock. Krishna tadiya parapankaja. Krishna tadiya parapankaja. Yamuna Radhisha. How's Uddhava?
Oh,
Uddhava's teaching of the Uddhava Gita.
I'm okay.
Oh, yeah.